Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Comp Talk, the segment of the Riptide podcast here on Luke's Lounge, where we dissect everything competitive bodyboarding-wise from a local level, a state level, a national level, and an international level. And today we will be touching on an international specialty event called the Shark Island Challenge. You guys might have heard of it throughout the course and history of bodyboarding. But to dissect it and go further into the nitty-gritty, I would like to introduce my good friend and co-host, Sean Gregory Coops. Coops, I'm really glad to finally get that out of my mouth and welcome you into the show.
Well done, Luke Yaloisius. It's good to be here, mate. It took a few weeks, especially with your new baby on board. Congratulations, mate. It was 2 days before the event, I believe.
Yeah, like a bit of a, two or three. It's a bit of a blur for me. I think it might have been three, but two sounds even better. And, it was one of those mad scrambles to get it done, but baby decided when baby wanted to come, and Lozzie did an unbelievable job here at home, and everything was all good. And I think it was almost the perfect amount of time, the 3 days out, just to allow, the dust to settle and get into a little bit of a routine at home before we headed down for that great Sunday at the sunny Cronulla Point there. It was quite a banger, man. I got to give a shout out to you guys coming up with the Cold Coast crew, yourself, Deck, Itty, and Brendan Newton. Like, wow, man, like 4 out of the 5 head honchos there at the club, and you guys provided so many good times, so much support, running around with your clackers hanging out, just helping out, and even providing the competition flags, man. So huge shout out to the Cold Coast Bodyboarding Club.
Yeah, mate, we were happy to be there. That was an honour. It's as simple as that. And a lot of people probably don't know that Shark Island Challenge is actually called, I believe, the Shark Island Bodyboard Club. Am I right?
That's the board riders club name we've gone with.
Yeah, and that's what fucking board riders do, man. We just help out. We volunteer, and we were happy to be there. Like, I'm not going to lie, we had the best seat in the house, so there's no complaints on our end. It was on a Sunday, didn't have to take the day off. I would have taken the day off anyway, but it was nice to be there on a Sunday. The families came down, like my missus and kids came down for a little bit. My boys were having a little wrestle in the marshalling area. We got to see everyone's family basically because of the Sunday vibes. And I wouldn't have wanted it to be anywhere else. And I'm not just saying that. It was fucking all time being there live. It's as simple as that. For anyone that wants to know what it was like to be there, it was fucking sick, man.
Cheers, Coops. Thanks so much for saying that, man. I think I would have to agree. I spent a lot of time in the commentary booth, but when I did step out and have a quick little glance around, it was amazing to see the headland just bubbling and boiling over with people, like a whole range of people. You had, bystanders just cruising along the esplanade going for their daily Sunday stroll and end up just stopping and taking a couple of the hours of the competition, then you had the diehard fans, you had the old relics that came out of the woodwork from bodyboarding all up and down the east coast of Australia and even, the whole coast of Australia. You had, different business owners and politicians and a couple of mini celebrities and it was just so cool to see the froth was there. And it wasn't just for bodyboarding folk. It was for all type of people just to kind of watch and enjoy and to demonstrate really. And this was the whole, the whole grassroots idea really bringing the comp back is to demonstrate bodyboarding on an international scale to an international audience, I guess, but to really communicate to the rest of the general public in the area what it would be like to watch an event and how exciting it could be, because obviously we know the conditions were a little bit south and they were less than ideal, and we would have loved to have some straight, meaty 10-foot east slabs just cutting cunts in half. But at the same time, the big waves and the big swell and the challenging conditions, hence the name, the Shark Island Challenge, really kind of shone through and created a different sort of spectacle. So it was It was sick, man. I have really fond memories of that day, and hopefully we can go bigger and better next year.
Yeah, like maybe we can talk about the conditions, but just firstly, like how you and Sather and Sam, like how are you feeling? Like after, like as you guys organize the whole thing, you've been doing this for about a year now. Obviously, we don't need to. We can talk about the conditions separately, but as a whole, how are you guys feeling?
Yeah, we on a whole, we were pretty stoked. There were a couple of key areas that we really want to improve on for next year. One being splitting the comp over 2 days to allow for the ideal conditions to be incorporated into the swell window. We just didn't have the budget or the logistical ability to muster that up this year, because on the tight budget we were kind of operating on. So next year we'd really like to be able to split the comp over 2 days if required, and just allow the tides to be our guide there when it comes to the different swells we're on offer. Luckily, this south swell was just a little bit too south at times, so it did allow some inside grinders to grow on the reef, even like on a lower tide period. So that really helped in the opening rounds. But going back to what we really liked and disliked, probably another dislike. Always good to get the negatives out of the way early. I guess the broadcast could have been improved when it came to some of the athletes being followed out of the waves, possibly. The commentary, like me and Crispy were okay, and I feel like we did a decent enough job getting across to the viewers around the world what was actually happening. But at the same time, that was my first time on a live proper broadcast like that, and having to queue out to ads and queue into interviews, and making sure that you kept mentioning all these things, these sponsors and all the people that made the event happen, all the stakeholders constantly whilst trying to deal with the public only about 5 meters away from you, was also like a little bit of a challenge. And some of the replays could have been improved, and obviously the spelling of Louis's name plus many names, Louis Rimmington, could have been
Hamilton.
slightly in improved. And I guess maybe the layout of the comp, where we had, or the comp area, so to speak, we could have had some more bins available, some more portaloos. They had no real public
Yeah.
toilets there, except if you went to Shelley and you went to South Cronulla, which is probably a 500-meter walk minimum, or Shelley may be closer, like 300, 350, but still needs to be closer, I guess. And you want to keep people in that cauldron, or like lined on that headland. Sorry, just focusing in on the event and not having to go anywhere and get kind of dragged away. And like, and obviously, in the future too, having some food trucks and some possible
Oh
beverage
mate,
stations. You know what I mean?
I was gonna say, mate, you can do your food truck, but mate, just invite me next time. Cold Coast Bodyboard Club can put on the barbie, and I'm in. Like, it's like that's it's a club comp, so it's a club comp, the name of it. And that's what it's all about, mate. It would be, I can't believe I didn't even fucking like suggest it, you know, like
Yeah, but we also should have, as event organizers, suggested it too. It's a no-brainer, and man, it's a great
Yeah, but
idea.
this is the thing, mate. Your first run at it, you guys have got so much going through your head that you can't. It's so hard to know, it like to tick every single box, and that's where I really feel for you, because it was you guys nailed it in the scale of first time, and trying to figure out absolutely everything. Like straight away, you're always going to learn from what you did, even if you did it perfectly, you'd learn, and like you said about the commentary, like I would say next time have a run list of who's ready, who's going to the first one, who's, and have like different people coming in that are set there to go into that spot, instead of you having to worry about someone coming in, or this, that, the other, and it takes less pressure. Like if there's a script, you could say, that might help your brain out a little bit, because like you're the right man for the job, in my opinion, because you can talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles. So it's what you're that's what's needed, and Crispy is there as the co-anchor, and then you just have the odd person coming in, that's meant to come in. Do you know what I mean? And that might take some pressure off you, and you can have a bit more of a rest and this, that, and the other. But yeah, the food thing, mate, get the Barbie out there for sure. It would have gone, it would have sold out. It would have been amazing.
Mate, and what would you recommend on that barbecue? So, like, you see and hear the passion in your voice over this grill. What do you be throwing on that sizzling hot plate?
Oh, listen, down at the Cold Coast Bodyboard Club, sorry to name drop, but we kept it very simple. We got bacon and egg rolls, and then we got a sausage sizzle, and that's about it.
Quality.
Fresh bread, fresh meat. Not much there for the veggies, but I can't please everyone, mate. It's as simple as that.
Oh, fuck it. You could go just eggs in a roll, you know what I mean? Take the bacon and the sausage out. You might not appease the vegans, but at the same time, you can't fucking appease everyone, mate.
Nah, it's literally impossible. And if we sell out, we sell out, mate. So we please someone. But, yeah, like that I got another one from us. Like we had the privilege of being in the marshalling area. We got to see literally every single rider come through and sign their names on a rashi and a board, like a couple of boards, and got to chat with them all. And I would say that the speakers that we had on our end, when you're looking at the island, we were to the right. We need those speakers spread out along the whole frigging Esplanade, because our good mate from Cold Coast, Dane Woods and Declan McMullen, were just tearing it up, mate. Like, it was hilarious. Like, Deck had to keep him in line because Woodsy was going off. And he was so funny, mate, that I had to tap him on the shoulder a few times because it was like, too much. But then he got it. He kind of like has a little giggle, like sucks it in, and then just keeps going again. The information was there, being given, and it was like entertaining, in my opinion. Others might have said otherwise, but whatever. But I got told that on the other side of the peninsula, obviously you have the broadcast in the middle, so you're trying to stay away from that. But on the other side, no one had any idea of what was going on. They were just looking out to the ocean. And like my mate Dan said to me, he said, it would have been good to know who was in the water and what they were scoring. And it's like, if you were on the other side, you would have known, because that's what we were saying. It's as simple as that. So, you know, little things like that, mate, you know, and you're there hiring speakers the day before, weren't you? So it's hard, man. There's just so much going on.
Yeah, it was unfortunate we had to go down that path, because originally we had Tez and McKenna booked in, but he couldn't make it due to the change of date, or just, you know, the roving nature of the event. And he had himself double booked up at Scott's Head that the prior evening. He couldn't make it down for the next morning. So we would have had his PA system, and that's why we were kind of a little bit run off our feet setting it up, because we weren't used to what was – like, you know, we were almost relying on Terry to be there with his PA system. We would have set it up with him, and it kind of would have been all systems go from there. So that was a little bit difficult, and we couldn't get anything else from the other board riders clubs in the area, just because they didn't have a system at the time to kind of – well, have the capacity to get out to the rest of the point. So, that's something for next year we can definitely improve on. But, yeah, the commentary by all reports was amazing, unlike the beach commentary. Huge shout-out to Dane Woods and Deck, man. Like, yeah, I can only imagine them bouncing off each other and, like, almost a yin and the yang. Like, Deck can also be cheeky and funny, but he's a very you know, professional, civilized, astute man when it comes to the English language, being like a school teacher and all. And then you've got Dane Woods, who's just the Cold Coast upstart larrikin, which he's just like one in a million, that bloke. Like, I've actually copped an absolute, you know, lashing on his custard tarts Instagram page at the moment, because he got me to do a review, and I cooked it so bad and didn't realize that there was a difference between like the baked custard tarts and the fresh kind of wobble custard tarts, you know what I mean, the ones that aren't fully baked. And mate, like, I can't go back to Lily Billy Patisserie again for a while, eh? I kind of gave him a scathing review, and I reckon I've been blacklisted, especially with the hat I wear. I think I'm fucked, Coops.
Oh, mate, he was fucking talking about these custard tarts. No one had any idea what he was talking about. And we're all looking at each other laughing, going, what the fuck is going on? Like,
What are we talking about? He has built that page up so impressively, Coops. It's now
what's
over
it called? 10, do you know?
Custard Tarts of Australia. Shout out to Dane Woods. If anyone's listening to this, that's Custard amazing. Tarts of Australia. And he is bringing home some serious reviews from – you got Powerfish, you got Harry Bryant, you've got Angus McKay, who's an absolute legend. He's another Stanley boy in Cold Coast fella. He's a pretty runabout bloke too and knows his way around the colloquialism of English language. And, yeah, it's just it's fucking funny as, and it's such a Woodsy thing. It's such a – it matches his identity so heavily. So, yeah, everyone get around it. But I think back to his commentary, he's the perfect guy for the beach announcer because you can get away with a couple of off the tongue, off, you know, kind of cheeky-ass comments on the point because they're not recorded and going out to the rest of the world, and you can kind of have that fun, you know what I mean? Which is so good because it just suits him down to the ground.
I got to say, I don't know if you've got, like, you know, a rating on your live webcast, but I actually reckon he'd be fucking epic in the broadcast. Like, it's – that's the stuff that when you – it's almost like a Stab High thing versus the WSL thing where the Stab High thing, they just do whatever the fuck they want. And it's so entertaining, mate. Like, because you're just listening to this, mate, the one-liners he was coming out with, I don't know, I wouldn't even be able to, like, look them up on the internet to get them. They were that good. It was just so funny, eh? But, I love you know, that. Yeah. Like, I mean, and then we had, like Harley Ward came in at one stage. He got knocked out and he was like, oh, look, don't get me started on the rest of the day because – I don't know who provided the beers, but there were beers everywhere, and they probably weren't supposed to be. But they were all coming in, and they were getting on the mic, and it got kind of rogue at the end, but it was sick. Like, and then Deck was always there to line everyone out. Like the school teacher, he talks perfectly. Like he doesn't like I had to step in every now and then, and I'd always like stutter or like, you know, just fuck it up basically. And then he'd just get back on there and it was just like, it was like scripted almost, you know what I mean? And anyway, it worked. It was sick. But that, you know, next year, like whatever happens, happens. But I reckon that could work.
Yeah, let's get him on the broadcast. Fuck it. Take over the lead anchor. We're happy to have Crispy or whoever back or whatever, but just rotate in and out, and I'd love to do a little session with Woodsy there, just having a good yarn and just going backwards and forwards. I had a pretty funny time with actually Chris White over those misspelt names in the broadcast, man, and he just ran with Louis Rimmington so hard and, like, I couldn't believe
I got to take the glory for that because I looked at you, put your hand on your shoulder and said, can you please ask Chris White to go in with you? And you were like, oh, yeah, Whitey, do you want to come in? And he's like, yeah. Well, he said no because he was like, I don't know any of those guys. And then he said, yeah, I want to do Louis for sure. So, and that worked out perfectly, eh?
Oh, it was great, man. Yeah, he's such a great time. See, he's such a great fella to have a yarn with and so knowledgeable, but also willing just to push the boundaries, much like Woodsy, and just have that kind of tongue-in-cheek commentary where, yeah, you can kind of, you can blur the lines, so to speak, Sean. You can blur the lines.
Yeah, man. But, look, you guys nailed it. Like, all those things, you know what went wrong. And you just try and fix it up as you go. If anyone ever thinks that the broadcast is going to be like the WSL, they're fucking tripping, mate. Like, that broadcast is so expensive and they know exactly what they're doing. It's like money talks type of thing. And, like, you guys were never going to get close to that because of how good the WSL is, yeah? So it's like... it's a stepping stone and you'll get better and better and better. And, you know, you get one, at least everyone's getting to watch it. So,
plus they've been doing it for years, man. And they've got way bigger budgets. I reckon that the broadcast was definitely good for how much we paid, but if we have enough more, some more money in the budget next year, which I'm envisioning we will, it'll just be bigger and better. And I think overall, so I've talked about the negative sides of the comp, but you know, the positives definitely outshone the negatives in Mark Sams and my opinion. And you know, you look at the overall response from the general bodyboarding community, you look at the general response from the local community, you look at the riders and the athletes and how happy they were. Toby from Bodyboard King was just over the moon. Jeff was stoked. Michael Osler and Mark Rossi from Handpick Boards was stoked. Lee from Innovative Home Loans was stoked. You had Crispy, even, who had been on, you know, numerous, they did the Skull Candy comp and, you know, he's surfing New South Wales, surfing Australia, all the board rider battles, all the big QS comps he's commentated on. And he said that was really well done for, you know, your first attempt and it can only get better from there. And like having the 52-foot boat out on the water there, you know, Brendan Newton doing the live interviews and copping heaps of sea and weather and having Woodall, you know, organize and marshal the troops and get everyone sorted there and being like the comms man there and really helping out. Gleeso and Ben Hall on there, John Showell, you know, like legends of Shark Island, all getting in on the vibe. They were all really stoked and happy. Watching Leicester get all the way to the final and still showing why it's a huge advantage for locals to be out at that wave and to be able to read it because it's one of the world's hardest waves to read over the three sections of Peak, White Rock and Surge. And just the general feedback from everyone who was involved in the event or watched it was really positive and it warmed our hearts and actually made us want to go again and put in a year's worth of our time for no financial benefit really. And I think that's what people have to realize out there. This isn't the IBC who are all getting paid X amount of dollars to run a comp. This isn't Alex Leon back in the day when he was running the World Bodyboarding Tour as a dedicated director or commissioner of the sport, and that was his job. Not saying he was earning heaps of coin either, but that was his job at the time. Mark, Sam and myself all run small businesses as like you, Coops, and like you run a bodyboarding club. And you know, like how much time it saps out. You just even communicating to the athletes and the riders and the clubsmen and club women, like about what's happened on the day and organizing this and how we need this sorted and where's this power lead and all sort of stuff. And times that, you know, by 100 with the added pressure of, you know, the world looking down on Australia. I just want everyone to know out there that like it was a bit of an undertaking for no real reward, so to speak. Not saying we're in it for money. I think the reward was getting bodyboarding back where it should be in Australia, and that was the whole aim of this comp because we were so fucking sick and tired of just seeing people sit on their hands and not do anything about it and knowing that the comp could be running but it wasn't, and the amount of thrill and enjoyment it gave us three as Groms growing up around some of the world's best bodyboarders coming to our town and raising the level of bodyboarding and showing what everyone could do at that wave was so disheartening, not seeing it happen. So to have that happen again and to see the vibe and to see the parties and to see the, you know, the events surrounding the actual event, like the lawn bowls event, the launch party, the wave pool party, all these sort of stuff thrown into it. There's a lot of work behind that. And the reward was to just get the stoke and the passion of bodyboarding going again in the local area and hopefully it filters out into Australia and the world in a different way. But let me just make it clear, there was a couple of nice boozy dinners and a couple of free cases of tequila and whatever, but that was about fucking it for payment, you know. So like it was a great experience, but fuck man, like if I didn't run my own show and could take off time and do this and that and just drop work to go to a site meeting at 1 p.m. on Cronulla Esplanade with the production team of talking about how we're going to set up cameras and where we're going to put generators and whose Wi-Fi we're using and where's the ether cable, where's the priority board going, have we got Craig Haddon down from Newcastle to make sure this and that, we got Sam out on the fucking ski at the island looking back at the house we've rented out to make sure that, you know, everyone can see the priority board. That's just one day of going backwards and forwards about one small segment of the comp, you know, and then times that over 365 days to lead up to that time. It was huge. So I'm going to end my rant with just saying it was such an enjoyable time for Mark, Sam and myself, but at the same time, it was super stressful and like it's a lot of work.
Fucking oath it is, mate. It's crazy. Like I saw Osler the other day. We had lunch together, and he was saying to me, he goes, "Man, do you understand what those guys did?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course I do, but I don't know if anyone else does." And he goes, no, you don't understand. I've been stopped in the street like 4 or 5 times off absolute, like a guy from the post office, like was like, "Oh, you're the guy from the bodyboard comp. That was fucking amazing. I sat up there and watched the whole thing." Like it's that type of stuff that makes you buzz, you know? You're like, what? Like just full on randoms. Like what it did for the community, the local community especially, it was like, oh, bodyboarding was back in the area, man. And then having a couple of the internationals here and things like that, and some of the performances by them, especially like Jerry, like it was fucking amazing, mate. You know, you get a little bit let down by the waves, but it was a complete success, mate. You guys killed it. It was so sick.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, thanks heaps. I know that's so crazy to hear also saying that, and like that is the ripple effect of it, hey. And even look back on the numbers, like I think our highlight clip has got 25k views, which, you know, huge shout out to Trent from Sporting News, man. Like the way he got the hype clips out and then the post clips within 24 hours of the comp finishing up and just nailing it was incredible. Adrian Edmonton also getting together the Urban Wave Pool Party and with Common Thread and making sure that live potty went ahead with you and me with a couple of audio glitches, but at the same time, like, you know, just that sort of stuff is like mind-blowing. And the people that put time and in effort around the whole thing, you know, was even like Brad Whitaker just on the water safety ski and the council lifeguards. Like council lifeguards discounted their rate heavily just to be there for that day and make sure the athletes were safe. Brad just wanted he didn't even want anything, and we just gave him money for his fuel for the day and a couple other things just because we felt so much gratitude towards him for his time just spent out there. And John Veege from The Leader, like covering all the stories, Luke Madden from Surfing New South Wales and Surfing Australia, helping out in the background. Like there were so many people that came together and made it happen. And like, yeah, it's all just one big fucking mind fart at the moment. You know what I mean? Thinking like,
even like you and I was like, oh, we should talk about this while we're fresh. And then I was thinking back to the first club comp that I ran, like something so minor, and I remember my brain was just, I couldn't think straight for like 3 days. It was just like, oh my god, it's fine, that's over. And your brain just got to recover, you know what I mean, let alone from the beers that you would have drunk. But you know, it's wild, eh? While we're talking about the broadcast and stuff, so what kind of views did you get and things like that?
So yeah, the highlight reels on 25k are a little bit more at the moment, but the views for the live broadcast were 75 or 80k, I'm pretty sure, all up.
Wow.
So I think it was 50 or 55 on the day and then 20 after that, 2025. So yeah, it was pretty good, man. Like, I mean, you know, in comparison, you had, which is on a lower scale, but still really cool to watch. On the same day, they had the board riders event at Urban Surf, all the local board riders here in Cronulla competing out there. And I think their live stream on average was having between 40 to 50 viewers at a time.
Right. Okay.
And that's just a local board riders thing. But like you think about it, at an urban surf wave pool where surfing is, you know, currently a lot bigger of a sport and a larger industry with a lot more reach, you look at those comparisons and think to yourself, well, that's pretty good for bodyboarding that's been out in the sporting wilderness for so long. And, you know, more so in Australia, I'm not saying the rest of the world, like there's still so many cool competition. I think the IBC is still, you know, with their faults and problems, is still doing a pretty good job worldwide to keep some sort of tour going. But here in Australia, we all know it's been a dog's breakfast over the last 6 or 7 years. So to have it kind of back, you know, with that specialty event, not saying there's a tour for people to follow here in Australia, and it'd be great to get the ABA back up and running, you know, Benny Oborn. I only saw a clip of Benny Oborn put up today from the closeout potty. Shout out to the boys, the closeout potty. And it had him on the beach at Mystics. I think, oh no, was it Mystics? It might have been Avalon or D-Bar or somewhere. But he was wrapping up the ABA comp for that year and just dropping the names of like Davis Blackwell and Joe Clark and all these sort of people that used to follow it so heavily and still boog really well. But to get back to that stage is where we really want to be, and to have, you know, this event of the Shark Island Challenge and even your bodyboarding events, man, on the local level, the Cold Coast clubs, you know, and all the board riders clubs, bodyboarding board riders clubs up and down the East Coast of Australia and obviously the whole coast of Australia is the stepping stone to there. So to have the little links in the chain kind of, you know, put back into place where they've been missing for the last, you know, almost decade, it's really good to see that come back and then more relationships form and networking forms, and then it kind of becomes a broader scale picture. So yeah, you feel like you're at the kind of helm of something a little bit bigger than just running like a normal comp, which was really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of worth to touch on the IBC a little bit just while we're talking about it. Like you definitely got to give them, now you've been in the thick of it and you've experienced it yourself on whatever, you know, you had to organize, like you definitely got to give them some street cred for what they've done and what they're doing. You know, that the structure of the actual tour, the word tour, is where it doesn't work for me. It's like, it's not a world tour if the whole world's not competing on it and the best guys in the world are competing on it. But as for events in international countries, I think they're doing a really, really good job. And the actual events themselves are fucking amazing. Like they're long and, you know, they've got people coming from overseas, et cetera, et cetera. So got to give them some cred for that for sure. And one thing that you and I learned was on the ground at the Shark Island Challenge was fucking best day ever. And, you know, the waves were average. So, like, we often talk about how shit fucking Antofagasta is and this and that. But on the beach, it's probably pumping, you know, there's probably a party going on at the same time and everyone's happy. You get a winner and it's really good. That's it's just something to think about, isn't it? Like, cause we always look at it in all different types of ways. I just think the actual tour is just, it just doesn't work for bodyboarding because you can't get everyone to fly around the world anymore because there's no money. That's what I was kind
definitely.
Of anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like,
No. I totally agree with it. The IBC is doing a great job, yeah, in the South American and European countries. And I know they go over the Maldives and all that kind of stuff, so that they get in the Pacific a little bit. But yeah, we've always said it's missing that key element of like an international, well rounded kind of roster. But at the same time, you're so right, man. I think it's more so with these events, especially if you're lucky to be there live, like, you know, when you watch the Fronton event or, you know, you see people, I know the Antofagasta one, like, is not the best way, but that's one of the biggest festivals there and it's kind of pumping. And you see when Arika was on tour, like, so many people would flock to the grandstands and the setups there, and you know, they've got athlete areas, and that's probably one thing we need to improve on in next year too, is kind of get a designated athlete area where you can kind of chill out and more so for the VIPs too, to make sure that you can kind of have a segregated area, you know, where people are getting, you know, fed food and drinks and all that sort of stuff. But I guess the only problem with the point is that it's amazing, but there's no way to kind of go down on the beach and watch it. You've got to be up on the headland, and there's a long stretch there, but it's also a walkway at the same time. So we've got to think of how we can actually get, you know, more structures and more seating there in the future.
But I mean, that's where you've got the broadcast, and if you get there and it's too busy, you know, you go and watch the broadcast. If it's full, it's full. Like, you got to remember the other day, it was a Sunday, and the waves were big, so it brought a whole lot of randoms. You definitely need security at that house next time, because everyone was just walking in there. And it was kind of like, well, what are you doing in here type thing. I saw some people, I was like, I just don't think I would have walked in if it was me. But it was
I know. I think that was a local connection to Curly and whatever. They didn't go into the house per se as much, more so like the front yard. And yeah, it kind of made like that just a mixed bag of people where you kind of should have someone on the gate just being like, well, you're an athlete, are you a staff, are you a sponsor, like da da da, and then you can come in for the day kind of thing. But yeah, again, all learning curves. But I guess touching on the conditions, man, like when you look at the swell we've had and now what we've had the days after, like we ran the comp on Sunday the 16th of June. It was obviously solid in the morning, like 4 to 6 foot, and grew to like a ridiculous 10 to 12 foot, like kind of just bigger than what we yeah, for sure. There were 15 foot washthroughs going all out to sea, but like pretty rare you see that bomb in the middle of bay breaking, but hadn't seen it this year and hadn't seen it the last couple of winters. So it was one of those doozy swells. But I guess we didn't think it was going to grow so much, but our predictions were pretty on cue. Like we knew it was going to be south enough to run on those low tide, just after low, like 2 hours after low tide in the, at 11:30 AM in the morning on Sunday, all the way through to 5 PM. And we knew that that wind was supposed to shift more west-southwest as that low threw up another pulse. And it shifted its axes a little bit. So the wind went, you know, kind of variable south-southwest, not light, but like, you know, variable in its direction, kind of south-southwest to southerly during the day, and then kind of whip back around to southwest, almost west-southwest on dark. And yeah, there were definitely waves in the final. It was a tough one in the first semi, I've got to admit. Like it was a duck dive fest. And when you look at some of the competitors out there, I remember Cohen Thomas coming to me after it. We were just chatting, you know, just having a yarn. And he looked at me dead in the eyes. And this is like a big Tasmanian lad, like a big lad who's like fit, strong, much like Harley and his brother Charles and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Sam Thomas also, like the four of them are indestructible in big waves. And, you know, Cohen's in WA at the moment. He's relocated there. He's surfing big waves over there. And he looked at me dead set, dead square in the eye, and just said, I almost drowned out there. And I'm like, what? And he's like, dude, if there was another, like he duck dived 6 or 7 closeout sets in a row at Washington the Picos, if there was another one behind it, I could feel myself getting dragged further and further back. And like, I was running out of air, and I'm like, holy shit. Like you don't fully understand until you really, even from a rider and like my perspective, until you get out there and feel the raw energy of it. It was a really powerful swell, man. So hats off to all the competitors. And I'm glad we got that in on the Sunday, because there was a Wednesday morning, 2 days after, that was really fun. Still south, like 155, 160 degrees, but there were some good nuggets on the inside. Like a couple of clips and frames will come out of that, will like look amazing. Still south, but still sick. So definitely not, definitely contestable, but only good for kind of like 2 hours, and then went shitty. And then after that, even Wednesday, Arvo, and Thursday, they weren't amazing. Like I surfed on Thursday morning, it was fun, 4 foot. You know, really nice direction, but just again chipping in and just getting barreled and kind of coming out the end, not like, you know, the heaving southeast, east southeast ones you want. And then after that, we've just had no island days. So let's put it this way: if we didn't run on that Sunday, the 16th of June, and we're now in the 3rd of July with the forecast coming up, you know, the end of the forecast, there seems to be at the moment like the 14th or 15th, which we've been talking about off air, Sean, about the possibilities of running a Headlands Invitational event on that week. And there is an east swell growing. But, man, so far out, there's been no swell since. We'd have had to extend the waiting period. And we would have been holding our cards real close to our chest, just praying the dealer didn't whip out a fucking, you know, Jack and an ace, because like we would have been fucked, mate, in the game of blackjack. You know what I mean? Like think about like trying to hold out from that waiting period, go 8 weeks deep into it, and then not run the comp for a seventh consecutive year. It would have been
a drastic. That was the swell to run. Like, that was a fucking swell. That system, I understand that it didn't work out to be perfect, but that was the one. It was a week long. You guys got super unlucky with the tyre situation that week. That was that one week where you kind of had to make a decision, wasn't it? Like, you said that there was a couple of low tide weeks during the waiting period. Am I right? And that was one of them. So, like, the Sunday was the last day, yeah. So, just to explain, like, there was a couple of – I actually went and read some of the trolls because the next day I thought it was hilarious reading what some people wrote. A couple of people were saying, why didn't you run on the Monday? Because it would have been, like, 2001. So, just to explain to them that – I think Monday was even bigger than the Sunday, wasn't it?
And it was dead set just closing out the whole thing. There wasn't actually even rideable waves out there. At least on the Sunday, you had quieter moments every 10 to 15 minutes in between fucked up pulsing 10-foot sets where you could get insiders. And that's where you saw Lester and Benny Sawyer, obviously, you know, winning the event, Jack Baker, Jace Finlay got a couple of those ones. Like, those inside grinders were the ones. And if you picked them out, Sean Pine too, you fucking picked them out. But on Monday and Tuesday, there was none of them. The ocean was a fucked up mess.
Yeah, so it was big Sunday, big Monday, big Tuesday. Wednesday dropped off. It was good early, you know, whatever, low tide in the middle of the day. And then I checked the cams late and it looked like there was a couple in the arvo. And then as it got higher, it actually looked like it got worse. Like I imagine you would have, with the time you would have need, you would have either been running in the dark or what. But like
that was the issue. We would have run half an hour into the dark, and legally, you know, people got to think of this like it's logistically, like, to think about all the different, you know, elements that come into it and the people involved. Water safety with PWCs can't actually operate a personal watercraft, a jet ski, before sunset and after, I mean, before sunrise or after sunset. So that takes them out of there. They have to get out of there. They legally have got to go in and dock. And then you've got the broadcast team and how you're actually going to, you know, increase the, what have they got, night vision goggles and their fucking cameras, you know what I mean? Like, it gets that dark. You couldn't even barely see them. So there's so many things that come into play that, like, even the judges, for example, like, how are they going to be picking people out of the lineup, you know, with the different colors still being that far away and everything like that. Like, it was just because you're in the darkest time of the year, that's the hardest thing. And I think, obviously, looking at it for next year, it'd be great to be able to have a waiting period of like 3 months or 6 months and somehow just have things on high alert and do the same kind of 10-day, you know, orange kind of call and then allow international to look at it and then to see, you know, if we are going to pull the trigger, knowing that we've got the ability to pull the trigger on one day and then still back it up with the second day and to only have to, you know, run for 3 or 4 hours of that day and then just get the best conditions for the final or the semifinals and final the following day.
Oh, mate, I reckon you're just having the second day is going to solve all your problems. Like, and then if you don't get swell, you don't get swell, but that'll solve it. Like, having the internationals there was amazing, mate. Like, that was so cool. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize, I'm pretty sure all the internationals were leaving the next day, no matter what. So if you were going Wednesday for some miracle, they weren't going to be there either. So that's another thing. And then I'm pretty sure Sadler said the broadcast couldn't have even happened on Wednesday because you guys made the decision that the low tide weeks basically couldn't run and then they couldn't be there anyway. So it's kind of like, it's not like, oh yeah, let's just do it that day. It doesn't really, it just doesn't work that way, eh?
It doesn't, man. Yeah, there's so many other parties to think of. It's not just like throwing a 3x3 tent up on the headland and then just sending people out, you know what I mean? It's it'd be great to get big floodies from up on the top of the headland and,
wouldn't it?
You know, even the boats and just light it up at night time. Had Doug and John Shaw surf it at night time and it's pumping high tide. So definitely doable, but at the same time, that's for like years to come, and I don't know how insurances would cover us there, but that's for another conversation, Sean Gregory Cooper.
Yeah, man, that'd be a spectacle. I could imagine all the locals would be stoked on that. These big bright lights going into their windows for all the old, you know, the retirement village. They'd love it. Sure,
yeah, I think but, you know the.
One thing I was going to say, if we can talk about it as well, a couple of people that weren't there, yeah? So you had on the list Jeff Hubbard, Tanner McDaniel, Pierre Louis Costes, and Noah Dean. So Noz cut his foot. I saw him cut his foot in person.
We both saw him cut his foot.
Yeah, you were right next to me. So Noz was out with an injury, yeah. So I believe, and it was just in a bad spot. It was on the bottom of his foot.
Shocking, and I actually think it reared its head in the Stab High Comp over in that Japanese wave pool, because even had a couple of people say to me he didn't look in his best form, and you know his airs are pretty radical, and he goes quite fucking high, and as you know, he's probably in the peak of his powers at the moment. I think he would have been holding back and just kind of nursing that foot through some of those airs. And he even said before he went, man, he's like, man, if I put a flipper on or do anything, it's just going to burst open like a fucking pussy and maggot-filled, you know, infected cut. He was just like, it is so weak and tender and all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure the doctor said to him, oh, it's going to be like 3 to 4 weeks before this thing even heals. And I think he was going to Stab High like on the third week. So yeah, he was out. Pierre Luis Costes had placed second in Brazil and was kind of done with traveling. I think it was just too much for him to turn around and come back to the island.
Brazil's a long way away, mate. He turned up with like his eyes hanging out of his head like that. That was always going to be a bit of a tricky one.
For sure. And I think also, too, not knowing what the comp would have been like. And I think a lot of internationals might not have realized how it was going to be portrayed or how much of a big event it was going to be. So, you know, totally get for the first time, like even on Tanner's level, like Tanner obviously wanted to go home and he was feeling homesick and kind of broached that opinion to us as he was leaving it and telling us that he wasn't going to compete. And we definitely get it, you know, totally get it. He's a young man. He's got the world at his feet. He can always come back and stuff. But I don't think maybe the magnitude was realized of like what it was going to be as a spectacle. Obviously, the waves were tough, but the way it was kind of pumped up, and I think I've got to pump like Sad Sam and my ties up here and say that like the way it was marketed and pushed out to the masses showed as it reached different audiences that just weren't in the circular circle of bodyboarding. It kind of went more mainstream, which was really, it was sick. Like even have the Swellians cover it, you know, like Vaughn and Jed, like you and me are obsessed with those cunts. And like to hear them speak about it and to get pumped on, you know, a bodyboarding event where they're just two core surfers that are just so intertwined in that industry, it was so cool to see Stab doing an article, you know, like they realized Noah was in the comp and seeing the benefit of that. And I know Noah was a very dubious and you know, controversial pick for the comp, you know, as there would have been so many other people we could have thrown in, i.e. Damien King, three times world champion and one of the biggest mouths on the internet. He could have been like one of the dudes that would have just easily slotted in. He's won the comp 2001, arguably the best comp that's ever been out there. So he could have easily taken his place. But at the same time, we were trying to marry up surfing and bodyboarding, the committee, and making sure that there were different interests from varying parts of, like, you know, the global sporting world that would allow bodyboarding not just to be its own little world and to cherish the idols within that world, but make sure you kind of branch out to the larger audience. And that was the biggest key there, with like not being
genius, mate. Genius. Love it.
Thanks, well, brah. Yeah. It was a tough one to kind of push, but we felt like it was the the right way to go. And I think the right people around the world noticed that, which was really, really humbling and like really cool to see. And then, yeah, so you got Tanner, Noz, Pierre, and then obviously, who was the fourth one? I'd just forgotten.
Oh, sorry. Well, Jeff. So
Jeff, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, which I don't know if people knew that he was going to take Jerry's spot. When he had to go home, they were going to crisscross, weren't they?
100%, yeah. It was announced at the launch party that, like, if Jared couldn't come, Jeff was going to take his place and vice versa, with Jeff being on, like, a 10-week or 8-week? It was quite a large holiday in Europe with his family. So if the dates coincided with him being home and back in Hawaii, he would have definitely jumped on a plane over. But otherwise, Jared was there, and I don't think we would have lost anything with one or the other being there. Like, it was
for sure.
It was amazing to see what Jared did, man. Like, far out, just showed how much of a good bodybuilder he is. And dude, he's a 2-time world champion, bro. Like, people need to really remember that and really understand, like, his air game is fucking psycho.
There's standouts in the contest that especially when you were there watching, standout moments. But he had to have been the biggest standout, and he only surfed one heat. Like,
yeah,
it was fucking crazy how good that guy is, man. Like, he did a backy and it was so sick, but he just like fell off. And then the air forward, that you don't even need to mention it. Like, in real life, mate, the whole point, like, roared. It was amazing, eh? And the skill he has to actually do that on, you know, there was bumps and you know, a lot going on, just kind of goes to show how good of a rider he actually is. Fucking unbelievable, man.
Fucking unbelievable, man. Yeah, and just to come over and to do that after, you know, years of not being in the Shire. Like, mind you, he did spend a lot of time in the area and, you know, obviously has honed his skills out there, as of Jacob Romero, because Jacob Romero put on quite a show in his first round heat, knowing that, you know, the waves weren't amazing, but, you know, some of the backflips and just his lip line and the way he approaches the lip over any section of that wave. And anyone who surfed that wave knows that it's not the best aerial wave. Like, there's definitely sick bowls out there, and you talk to the right people and they're going to say that, yeah, this is a great bowl to hit. And they really are. They've got so much power and boost in them, but it's not the best landing strip. You know what I mean? And like, for them to then hit those airs over those jagged, you know, fucking just protruding rocks is insane. You can even see on Jerry's backflip, he kind of comes down to the trench a little bit, the same trench that, you know, broke Les's clavicle in the semifinal, which I just want to clarify right here and right now. If anyone listens to the closeout podcast with Benny Oborn and myself, we have a great yarn, but I also fuck up. Me and him both fuck up, actually, speaking about when Lester broke his clavicle. It was definitely in the semifinal when he was in the Black Rashi in that trench-like South Grower. It wasn't in the final.
It's the big one, pretty much the one on the highlight relay.
Yeah, the one he just doesn't make because he just can't make. It just implodes upon itself.
That thing was insane. It's got to be, like, I know, like, Ben got awarded barrel of the contest, but that was the wave of the contest. It's just that he didn't make it. Like, that thing was, because we saw, like, standing there all day, we saw one or two hit the reef, like, really mutantly, like, really insanely. But that was the one that got ridden that was like, oh, my God, he got it. Like, this is it. And then it just went too gnarly for him, eh? Fuck, it was sick.
100%, man. Below sea level, full trench out. Like, he was in the Gallipoli trenches there, man. Like, he had machine gun fire, fucking, you know, water pellet bullets just coming down from that lip on top of him. He was getting deeper and deeper into the belly of that thing, and he just was not going anywhere. Even the great Andy Lesser, the goat out the island, couldn't make that one. And you know, it was evident of how gnarly the conditions were. But yeah, like, you know, back to Jerry and Jacob, the way they were doing those airs and flipping their body over and just coming unstuck, like, you know, with Jacob, I know he progressed through to the semifinals and then just couldn't get a bowl out there for the semi, which obviously, you know, huge wash-throughs and tougher conditions. But if Jared just landed one of those moves, he was through. And he was centimetres away from landing both of them. It was just those clutch moments. Unfortunately, you know, and with the conditions kind of mixed in, rendered him unstuck. So it was just, yeah, it was so cool to watch. And you look at Steph Corcoralis, like he was smooth and calculated and got the scores on the board. Marley Dunn was just a pocket rocket again and just one of the – fuck, man, he's a little mini Winnie, that dude, eh? Like, he's got the whole setup. And I've noticed he can drop knee, you know, much like Winnie. His air game's bullshit. His ability to read the barrel and stay high and go low and just get himself out of, you know, crazy gurgling pockets in you know, beastly-like waves is so cool. So, yeah, there were so many performances, man. And, like, you know, just going to Leicester. Like, Leicester, let's put this in perspective. Leicester was half a point away from winning his second Ireland challenge with a broken clavicle after he had done it in the heat before. This man isn't just a spring chicken. He is into his 40s and is a fine-looking silver fox, but he's a silver fox none the fucking less. And he's out there with broken fucking bones pushing himself through these waves. Like, it was unbelievable. It was, and, you know, great to see Benny Sawyer win. I'm so happy for him because we all know, you know, he picked the eyes out of the conditions. He surfed the best in the final. He maximized his time in the tube, knew what he was doing out there. He spent a lot of time out there. It means the world to him. He's a great guy, and it could not have gone to a more deserving person. So I think he, you know, he should revel in that for years to come. But, man, what a fairy tale would have been if Leicester could have clinched that final.
Oh, mate, just backtrack. You got three big points there. The first one, Marley Dunn. So Jared Houston was the rider of the event and did make his heat. But Marley Dunn was the victor of that because he got second in the first heat and just got over Jared Houston. And that was a massive positive, man, because Marley Dunn, we got to see what he's really made of. Like, he could have won the final, you know, like he made it all the way to the final. He was a massive standout, mate. The way he was riding those waves, it was like he was just at his local, just whipping around. Like, he was doing reverse spinners. Like, who does that on the face of the island? Like, I don't think anyone does, do they? But it was...
Yeah, not me. Actually, shout out to previous and past winner, Blackie, Josh Gahee, man. He's the only dude that whips ridiculous reverses back into the pocket and still somehow makes them. But, yeah, very rare to see.
Yeah, but, you know, but impressive, you know. Like, we're not watching an IBC comp where we're watching everyone just looking for the one fucking flip bowl. Like, guys were really, like, tested to the conditions, but surfing really well, you know, like super professional. And I thought that Marley Dunn was a breath of fresh air. Super stoked for him. He could have won the whole thing. Then we were talking after that, you were talking about, we talk about Leicester. Like, look, I mean, you'd have to say Jared Houston, Marley Dunn, and then Leicester basically got the wave of the contest and just didn't make it. Let's be honest. Like, that thing was fucked up. That broke his shoulder.
Death chamber.
And then to ride, even just ride at least a wave in the final with a broken shoulder is like, come on, mate, that's not going to happen. Plus, they were duck diving about 50 sets. Like, I sat there and watched all of them. They were going under. Like, it was, I felt so sorry for them in a way, you know what I mean? Because the waves didn't stop, mate. And for him to come out and get two really good waves in the final, in a heat that I'm telling you, the best waves in that final were ridden. There were nothing that got through. Like there was basically Ben and Lester's two waves, and then the other boys just got a couple of scraps just to get some, but there weren't any other waves to ride. You know, it's not like they missed them.
Oh man, so, I think we're not paying homage to Michael Loster's left hander out there, and just the bottom turn to roll over like a pretty sketchy part of the island. Obviously, wasn't going to score as high as the rights, and didn't get the barrel time that Andy and Benny got. But fuck, man, and there was actually, you're right, like no wave went unridden, but there was one wave for Marley Dunn where he came through this peak section and then just got a little bit greedy with the foam ball and might have got bucked off, and then it ran off over White Rock and Surge, and that could have been a score that could have put him in contention for the top spot, man. I remember talking to him at the after party at the Prezzo, and he was just like, oh, I don't know what happened there. That was the kind of wave that could have put me into the final and stuff. And, you know, like a grand final in the NRL, or, you know, watching the final five at Trestles, or, you know, the NFL Super Bowl, you know what I mean? Like it's the one percenters, and it's this little small errors that sneak into your game that decide the winners and losers. It's not big moments. It's those little one percenters. And you could tell that was the tail in the final in this year's challenge.
Yeah. The Osler going left was classic competitive Osler. Like I could be wrong here, but I honestly reckon he was like, well, I don't have much of a choice. And if I make something here, that could take me up a spot and I'm going to earn a little bit more money. Like I honestly, and it's exactly what happened. Like he went the left, and then he went from fourth to second, and fourth to third, sorry. And it was like, oh, well, he just made $500. You know what I mean? By just going, oh, like, dude, a more.
He went from 1,500 to $3,500.
For $3,500, like he just made $1,500 for one decision. And like, how smart is he? Like, that's why I had him picked for the winner, because he knew what to do to win. It's just that those conditions got so gnarly that it like the ocean kind of chose the top two anyway. You know what I mean?
For sure,
I think the boys did really well for what was on offer. That the final, the semis were hard to watch. I felt really bad for the guys because whoever turned on the switch just decided not to even pause it for 1 second in the semis.
Especially the first semi. The second semi had a couple of little moments in it where you could have got your scores for sure, but the first semi was like, man, it was going to war. It was picking up a weapon and going to war with the ocean.
Wasn't it? I was in disbelief, mate, going, oh my God, there's another one. Oh my God, and then you'd see them going under one and look out to Gibbon and go, oh, there's another one behind it, another set, I mean. And it was relentless. I just couldn't believe it. I watched Sean Pine in his semi. He got so many waves on the head. Like, I just couldn't. He did not stop duck diving. And he was, like, over at far lefts. Like, he was so far over because it just didn't stop. And he just had to keep paddling and ended up drifting over to the lefts. Like, he didn't. There was just no other option, you know what I mean? But look, the crazy thing, this is my take of the final, like Marley and Oslo, like taking the third and fourth spot, and you know, Marley did, they all did really well to even get a wave, to be honest, because it was really hard. The conditions definitely got better for the final. That it was a little bit calmer with the high tide, but still, you know, with the washers. But then, like, watching early in that heat, the man that was going to win the comp was the guy that was going to find those waves on the inside in between all the mayhem. And I mean, Ben Sawyer he was the man for the job. Like, I've surfed with him so many times now, and the way he surfs is he does not worry about anything that's coming behind it. He doesn't seem to have any fear of those situations. And when I saw those conditions, I was thinking, man, if anyone's going to be in the spot, it's probably going to be him. And it's exactly what he did early in that final. Like that, he got the wave of the contest. And at that moment, it was like, oh my God, he's going to win this comp. Like he just, he surfed it so smart. You know what I mean? But Ben was just doing what Ben does. That's just what he does. And it was the right thing for that day. You needed to pull out of Ben Sawyer. It's as simple as that. And he got his two waves and then found another wave later on as well. So like he got three kind of scoring waves where the other boys were literally diving for lobsters. But to break it up, it was a long final. Then all of a sudden you see Lester get, he comes in with a chip in and one hit surge and he gets in and out. And it's like, oh my God, imagine if Lester, like he's got a wave now and he's a contest machine. He knows the wave like anyone else. And all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, Ben stitched this up. Like, cause no one's going to find one. And then Lester's got one. We didn't know he had a broken shoulder, but he had a fucking broken shoulder. And I think it was 5 minutes to go, but I think Lester got the best wave of his heat and got pitted all the way along the reef. Like it was like, oh my God. Like it was so exciting, mate, because you had Ben that thought he was just home free. And then you had like, I think he's like a 6-time Aussie champ or something, pipeline champion, you know, second in the world 1 year. And you're like, oh, hang on, don't count this guy out. And he's the local like Lord. And it brought so much entertainment to the contest, mate. And the way you guys decided to keep the results hidden, it was like I had no idea who won because Ben's wave was so early in the heat that I was only thinking about Lester's waves because they were fresh. They were the last waves I saw, you know what I mean? And then you're like, hang on, like the – like Craig Haddon and all that, they've got the replays. They're definitely going to be comparing. We went to the presentation, me and Deck, and we were like, this could be anyone's because I can't remember the start of the heat. I just remember the last bit. You know what I mean?
I think you and me kind of said beforehand too that we thought Lester might have had it just because his second wave was bigger, but then watching back on the replay, unfortunately, he couldn't stay in the barrel or position himself deep enough to stay in it for the max amount of time, where Benny Sawyer's waves were both amazing, but probably not as big as that one Lester got, but he maximized his time in the barrel. And that's just, you know, I said it so many times in the broadcast, and I'll say it again, he just picked the eyes out of the conditions and just knew exactly where he wanted to be on that reef. And you're so right with the point about Benny, how he, you know, there was his comp to win with the so many waves kind of popping up and you just had to be ready to put it online and go the one you thought that was going to do it. His natural surfing in any sort of non-competitive lineup is exactly that. Like you watch him at Cape and he's just doing laps. He won't even get back out to the peak. He'll just be taking off something down the line and stuff. And yeah, you know, like he's really grown into a formidable force out there, eh? And one of those guys that will forever now hold a Shark Island Challenge to his name. It's a pretty sacred club. Like when you think about it, there's only been 21 people to do it.
I was looking at the trophy on the launch party and I was just wigging, man. Like and seeing like Ben's won it 3 times, I think. And then Galami Tamaga won it 3 times. I think Hardy won it 2 or 3. I can't remember if it was two or three. I think it was two. Like, how's that for dominance? Like, oh, my God. Like, to win it 3 times, what's going on? What was everyone doing? That's insane. It's so hard to win at once.
I know. And maybe that's why he declined his invitation this year.
Yeah, I think he's three and done, and he's just chilling. He would have been on. He would have been had a beer and had his legs up. He had his. He's got his two kids running around. He would have, you know. And the thing is with Ben, mate, like if he's in, he's in. So he probably just didn't want to put that pressure on himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, for sure. It would have been the same as Mitch Rawlins, how we offered him a position, and he unfortunately,
Oh,
you know, had
Mitch.
some other things going on.
Yeah, so
Hardy
Mitch
was
has
really
won it once
hard.
or twice.
I think it's
At least
twice.
once.
Yeah, 2016 he won, so he definitely won one of the best comps.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right.
And
So,
yeah, Hardy was the same with like the Hardy bodyboarding camps too. Coops, hard to get him in. He was only available for like 7 or 8 days out of the out of that waiting period with all these comps. We even had to get Brendan Newton back from one of his camps midway, you know what I mean, to actually come over and compete in the comp. So it was yeah, it was
Brendo's so good at that, eh? He's so good at his job, mate, on that mic.
oh, he's amazing for sure.
I believe that there was a lot of difficulties with that boat, and I thought that boat was going to end up on the rocks about 10 times. I can't believe it survived. But the size of the swell is what probably brought the difficulty there for you guys. But Brendo being on that boat, like he drove home with me and he said, "Fuck, man!" About 10 minutes in, like I just had to have a seasickness tablet, and apparently half the boat had to have one because it was just so gnarly. And like, luckily he had it because you imagine when you're focusing on a ride, are you focusing on this? I don't care how your sea legs are, it you feel sick, don't you reckon? I mean,
Oh,
I
for
would.
sure, man. Fucking oath. You feel super sick. And just, I remember going out to Sydney Harbour with my Lozzie, my missus, and her family. They want to go in this, you know, chartered fishing boat kind of adventure for the morning. And they just had a southerly whip up overnight. And it kind of baited during the morning, but it whipped up this like 1.2 meter, like 8 or 9 second wind swell. And just coming out of the heads there at Sydney Harbour, mate. It just turned from a beautiful sunny, you know, Sunday morning adventure with the family to like fucking like mop up the decks, all hands on deck. You know, people are just chucking up over the sides. They've, you know, got their head in the bowl and the dunnies. It was only me, Lauren's dad, and Lauren's sister's husband, Angus, who are sweet with the stomach. Somehow I don't get seasick, which is pretty bizarre because I'm not a huge seafood eater and I don't spend too many times on fucking boats and vessels and stuff. But I was sweet. The rest of the 10 or 12 of them were just fucked. So, you know, it's and that was like a 1.2 meter south swell, not a fucking 10 foot, you know, 3, 4, possibly 4.5 meter, you know, pulsing low that was like one of the biggest of the winter that we can remember or we've had so far. So yeah. Hats off to Brendo, hats off to anyone on that boat. And I guess the
Yeah,
hardest thing with that
Woodall.
boat too, yeah, Woodall, Benny Hall, Gleeso, Johnny Showell, heaps of crew. But the biggest thing was the broadcast out there kept cutting and out and the camera was really hard to operate just because of how bumpy that boat was. So I guess, you know, you think about the WSL and you think about the broadcast they do, they use a jet ski out there with people on the back because it's way less bumpy and you haven't got a huge 52 foot, you know, massive bail on a boat kind of, you know, swaying up and down. So, yeah, that'll be something to look into too.
Yeah, well, you know, it won't be 50 foot next time either, so it's going to make things a lot different.
Yeah.
But
Sorry, you go. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
no, like I was just going to say, like it's and listen, you learn from everything. You know, the boat was very necessary. Yeah, so
For
I
sure.
just think,
Definitely have the boat again.
yeah, I just think that if I was on that boat, fully clothed, I would have swum to shore for sure. There's no way I would have been on
I totally
it.
agree with you, bro. Oi, let's wrap this up with our best and worst moments, and I'll let you go first. What was your worst moment? Worst moment for the comp?
Worst moment for the comp for me was just the washers, mate. Just thinking about the riders, I was just thinking. if it was, I always picture myself in the position, and I actually like was like, I'm so glad I'm not out there. Just the washers were relentless, and that you guys could not control that. You had no idea it was going to pulse that hard. That's got to be the low light for me. What about you?
And and let's go straight from one side of the emotion scale to the other. What was your best moment of the comp?
Tricky. The final was sick, like with Ben and Lester being so tight, but I'd have to give it a Jerry, man. That was the spectacle watching him in real life. It was so entertaining, eh? I'd split between those two, but yeah, I might give it a Jerry though, because it was just watching someone launch at the island. It's something special, man.
So true, man. So true. It is special because it's a hard thing to do and only the best can do it. So, yeah, I totally agree.
What about you, if you give me about your whole experience, because you've been doing this for so long, like what was your worst moment of the whole experience and your best moment of the whole experience?
I'll give you two yep. worst moments on what in the lead up and then on the day. The lead up was trying to obtain a headline sponsor, like a main sponsor, a naming sponsor. We went through, yep. you know, various companies, you know, within the bodyboarding industry and outside the bodyboarding industry. And we're so glad we landed on Toby because he's been just such a professional to deal with and has just helped us out in so many ways. And it's given us free rein to kind of do whatever we thought was necessary to get the comp up and running, and he was happy to fund it. So that was amazing. That was probably one of the most, the hardest and stressful things of getting the comp up and running. And the second one on the day was the camera work for the live feed and just how it was really hard to watch rides all the way out and just some of the shakiness and maybe some of the glitchiness there. Like, not massively bad, but just like enough to make sure that that's one of the first things you address for next year, knowing that, you know, people watching at home, that's one of the main things they want to see is a good replay and be able to analyze it all the way through. And, you know, you're cutting off just as a person's trying to come out over surge, you're going to miss one of their limbs getting, you know, pushed out of their channel and their board popping up, or if they're making it or whatever. And there's a couple of makes that weren't followed all the way through. And as a commentator watching back on some of the replays and you know, as a commentator, people don't realize you're not watching the waves per se. You're watching a TV screen, a live broadcast of the camera angles to get the best understanding of what's going on so you can commentate. That was definitely a downside. But they're the two probably, you know, most negative and shittest moments for me in the 2024 SharkCon Challenge.
Just on that broad, the other thing is that maybe they were filming a little bit tight for the island as well, like, which I don't know. Fuck, who, man,
they must have just called Tig Lander or something, Coops, and they were just getting advice off him. It was tight as a fucking tiger, you know. It was crazy.
Just a bit tight for what the island deserves, and you know, that's just got to do with whether the person filming is a surf photographer or not. So it's probably a little bit out of your control, but probably worth discussing next time. But go on.
And then the best moments for Marcus and myself for the comp, like as in the lead up for it. Probably one of the nicest moments, and this is a real selfish one from Marcus and myself's perspective, and I know this is one of my favorite moments, was just going to sea level after the event had wrapped, maybe like 10 days after or something, and let the dust settle and just come together as mates, have a yarn, realize what we've achieved, go back over all the moments and talk about a couple of things for next year and just, yeah, enjoy each other's company with no like crazy business sense or like pressure placed upon us at the time. That was really, really nice. And probably my other favorite moment for the comp on the day was just Watching Andy Lester surf with a broken scapula, man, like I don't think people, I mean, maybe people do out there. Maybe I'm just, I'm not, because I haven't heard too much chat about it per se online, which people might be talking in closed circles or whatever. But I think that like Ben Sawyer's win was incredible. And it's anyone who wins an Island comp, you know, full hats off, incredible. And it hasn't overshadowed the win at all, but you just gotta think about the situation Andrew Lester's in. He's in his 40s. He's a man that like has performed at the top level for so many years, but is now a family man in the Shire and surfs the island regularly and still surfs it the best out of anyone. But you know, he's not hunting and punting for bodyboarding all the time that these days, but he still goes out there, puts 110% in, almost pulls it off with a non-functioning side of his top body, like his torso, while surfing one of the heaviest slabs in the world in some of the most treacherous conditions we've seen in years. Not the heaviness of each wave, but just trying to even manage the fucking ocean and stay in the spot with one arm, cunts. One arm is unfucking believable, you know? And like that to me was one of the greatest moments because he almost pulled it off. It was almost goat-like. But for him to even just stay out and complete the final and get those two waves and get barreled with holding on with one arm is speechless, man. Fucking speechless.
Amazing. I actually messaged him after the contest and you know what the fucking Lord said? He said, I'm just so glad that my son was there and he could see that no matter what happens, you never give up. And I just nearly had a tear in my eye. Hell.
Wow.
The king of the island. Look at that. And his old man was there. God love him. I haven't seen him in years. And I was having a chat with him and he sat there and watched every single wave that he caught. And like his whole family was right next to the marshalling area and they were just so stoked. It was so amazing to see them there just supporting him and because he's such a local king that it was all time, man. And I mean, well done. That's all I can say. Like, thanks so much for doing it. You, the three of you boys, and you completely hit it out of the park. And I just can't wait. I just can't wait to see what you guys are going to do in the future.
Cheers, man. Cheers, Coops. That's really nice of you to say, bro. And yeah, I can't wait either. And it's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And if anyone's listening, we're obviously open for sponsorship opportunities in 2025. So please hit us up at sharkislandchallenge2024@gmail.com. And we'd love to work with anyone and everyone and make this event bigger and better than it already is. So giddy up.
So while we're at it, why don't you just drop the names of the sponsors from this year just one last time, just so we can round it up, and including Riptide that we're talking on right now. Who else? Run us through them just one last time, Loki boy.
Well, obviously we've got the naming sponsor, Bodyboard King. Without them, there was just no way this was going ahead. So pretty ridiculous, Stephen C. Like Toby come on board and just make our lives so much easier and just to put the time and effort into it. Like, you know, he did a lot of work behind the scenes, also getting the merch and everything sorted and you know, guiding us through Swell Forecast and helping us out with connecting with the right people and, you know, putting the money into it. So it's just ridiculous. Obviously Handpicked Bodyboards, huge shout out to Austin and Mark, like legends of the game, absolute legends, love them to pieces and can't say enough good things about them. And then you've got Innovative Home Loans, again, Lee, really cool bunch of people and just got behind the event wholeheartedly. Hub Boards, you know, huge shout out to Jeff and Dub and to everyone involved there. They were really supportive, sent over some cool gear and obviously backed the event financially. And you've got to think about like all the smaller athlete sponsors that we haven't really spoken about so much, but did such an amazing job, like, you know, putting their money behind the athlete that they thought was, good enough, like good enough to win. Like Seascapes, for example, backed Michael Osser in. XSIT, like Rami's brand, they're a IT solutions company. They backed Josh Garner in. Bulk Nutrients for Louis Finnegan. You had the Wreckers that backed Cohen Thomas in, but also held the presentation and the after party there and put on food and grog for the competitors and sponsors. Thrash Leashes for Benny Sawyer. You've got SC Boogie for Dave Winchester. SC Boogie, they were really cool. Send some threads out to us, some really nice clothes. So if anyone's out there and wants to get some new threads online, they do some really cool designs, and I've been loving it wearing around the Shire recently. Tarrant Point Bowling Club, where we held the bowls day, and we had a nice little family/sponsor/athlete outing there. Back Sam Strachan, Matt Callahan Real Estate, Nymph Wetsuits, Hellfab Engineering backing their one and only director in, Sean Pine. Shout out to Pino. He's a wizard on the boog and could easily win that win that comp in his sleep. Bait Bay Pool Services threw in for Charles Ward. Bay, brother.
Who owns that company?
Oh, fuck. Some washed up cunt in the Shire. Who knows? But yeah, you know, if you ever need a pool clean, definitely shout out to them. And then, you know, you've got Pseudo Awa. I think I've said that correctly. I always fuck up Sam Venn's company, but Pseudo Awa. backed in Jackie Baker. Cold Coast Bodyboarding Club, they were all there making it happen. And yeah, there's so many sponsors that go on, like Great White Tattoos for Andrew Lester, Podwear for Lily Pollard. You've got Found Bodyboards for Harley Ward, Kiss the Sky for Jason Finlay, Number Six Bodyboards for Jacob Romero. Like, wow. Like the wealthy
club. Did you get them all there? That was impressive, man. I kind of put you on the spot with that too. Didn't really talk about that, but well done, man.
No, that's all right. No, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've got all of them. I think that the wealthy club was for Sam Thomas. They do ice baths and like health and wellbeing stuff. They had an activation there on the day doing some ice baths with some of their chillers and their blow up pools. So yeah, so many cool things. And they were the smaller companies that came on board that sponsored 25 riders that allowed a bit of gamesmanship into the comp. It allowed smaller stakeholders to get involved in international bodyboarding comp, and they really made up the crux of the budget in so many ways with those naming sponsors that I just spoke about beforehand that made it possible. So, yeah, huge shout out to them, and hopefully we'll be able to do the same sort of system next year and go from there. But yeah, I really hope those small companies got a kick of being involved and hopefully next year, which we will provide next year, just more of a VIP space and more of an area for them to kind of hang out on the day and mingle and get their money's worth. Not saying they didn't get that this year. There was a lot of extra, merch and benefits and stuff thrown in, but it was also great to see them just backing a local event and putting their money back into bodyboarding, because that's, God knows, that's what we've all need.
Yeah, and you couldn't have done it without them. Simple as that. So well done for supporting it. And I'm sure you're going to come out and do the same thing next year, and it'll be bigger and better, and the waves are going to be pumping, and you're going to do it over 2 days if you need it, and it's going to be amazing, mate. Well done.
Fuck yeah, and we hopefully can use Cold Coast Bodyboarding Club's flags again. We'll just go from there.
Yeah, man. I can't believe it didn't get in the... I was, like, trying to, like, wave him in the camera's face, and he just wouldn't fucking take the bait, eh? I'm not trying to get my logo in there. Come on, mate. Come and film me.
Hopefully next year we'll have our own. But, yeah, shout out to the club for bringing all that stuff up and saved us on the day. So the smallest thing we overlooked, but it was one of the biggest things on the day, but yeah, so many crew, man. Oh, and you too, Shawnee, and everyone. So it was a team effort.
And another one, I got a bit of feedback from Arthur. I reckon commentary on the boat is sending information out to the riders as well, because apparently they couldn't hear anything, obviously. So, but you know, whatever, put it on your to-do list, mate. All good. Privileged to be there, mate, and I can't wait for next year.
For often, brah. All right, thanks so much for joining me on Com Talk, Coops, and let's do it again soon.
Sweet, mate. See you soon.
Cheers, brah. You.